Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
One of my Leslie-isms is that there are only two things in the world that are absolute black and white. You're pregnant or you're not, or you're dead or you're not. Unless, of course, you're a fan of Princess Bride, and then you're just mostly dead. But my life, especially my professional one, is all about nuance and shades of gray. But many people prefer to see the world in terms of yes, no, good, bad, zero, one. And while it appears to simplify things, and that really appeals to our overstimulated brains, it actually creates more stress for us. And just take a moment and think about all the ways that this yes, no, good, bad, zero, one divide us. We have political divides, we have culture wars, we have the mommy wars, whether or not, in the home, stay-at-home moms versus outside-the-home moms are better, whether or not you should have children. There's even been an incredibly long divide over which leads to greater happiness and longer life, being married or staying single. And from my place of gray, I just fight throwing up my hands in despair anytime I hear these, dichotomies, these very simple ways of looking at the world. So today, I want to take you into my gray world and take on some of the commonly held ideas about the benefits of marriage versus the benefits or drawbacks of staying single. And to help me with that, I'm joined by Dr. DiPaolo. She's a professor of social psychology, and more importantly, she's the author of Singled Out, How Singles Are Stereotyped, Stigmatized, and Ignored, and Still Live Happily Ever After. So, Dr. DiPaolo, Bella, thanks so much for being on the show and talking about what is normally not the subject for my show, but I think it's really important to help people understand that it's really about the individual, isn't it?
It really is, and thank you for having me on my show, on your show. Yes, it really is. We like to think that there's one path that works for everybody, but in fact there isn't. And we are so fortunate to live at a time when we don't all have to follow the same life path. We can each figure out what seems to be the best, most fulfilling, most authentic lives for us as individuals.
Well, and in some cases, that makes things a little bit more complicated because back in the day, it was like, okay,
right.
Here were the rules and here's what you did. But so many people were truly unhappy. Now, really way, way back in the day, some of us didn't live long enough.
Right.
But sometimes having all these choices can be really confusing, and I think that's really why people like this, black and white world.
Mm-hmm.
I just have a hard time living in it anymore.
But. Right, right. So choice can be stressful. It can be intimidating. And so there was a certain comfort in the times when everybody just did the same thing and didn't even think about other alternatives. But like you said, it also ended up leaving a lot of people really deeply unhappy.
And while I'm going to step out on a limb, and I don't think that that happiness is the be-all and end-all, because I think that's a thing that ebbs and flows, and we actually can choose happiness even in the most horrendous circumstances. It really does put a strain and a drain on people, and I know that this is one of those things when people talk about the idea that married couples are happier and live longer. Mm. I don't know if you can hear the chorus of people who are like screaming, that's not me.
Right, exactly. And you know, it's not just people telling you about their everyday lives that say, no, this isn't true. Social science research is also not inconsistent, or is not consistent with that idea, even though you hear all the time claims that if you get married, you'll be happier, you'll live longer, you'll be happier.
Right.
But those are based on really misleading studies and interpretations of studies. If you look at the best kinds of studies that follow the same people over time and look at what happens when they go from being single to getting married, and there are now at least 18 studies like that, just studying happiness or satisfaction mm-hmm. with your life, what they find is eventually you end up no happier than you were when you were single after you get married. At best, at very best, you might get a brief period of happiness right around the time of the wedding, you know, that those early days.
Oh, the honeymoon, yes, the honeymoon.
Yes, exactly, the honeymoon effect. But then you go back to being as happy or as unhappy as you were when you were single. And not everyone gets that honeymoon effect. The people who eventually divorce, when you look back at how they were feeling around the time of the wedding, they were already becoming, on the average, less happy rather than happier.
Well, and it's interesting you mentioned that, because I cannot remember which magazine it was, Glamour, Cosmo, I can't remember which one it was, but they actually, probably it was several years ago, where they came up with a statement that 30% of women knew on their wedding day that they were making a mistake and they went through it anyway. And I went,
yes.
No!
Yes. Which is, in fact, there is even research on having those feelings on your wedding day that, you know, maybe this isn't the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when women have those feelings, it's more likely to mean that the marriage isn't going to last than when men have them.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, women's.
And do you know why that is? Is there anything that plays into that, that kind of explains why it's different for women who have those thoughts?
I don't think they found that out in that study. So it's, you know, it's up to us to figure that out now, or they need to do the next study.
Right. You know, and so part of the reason why, I mean, you've actually written two recent articles that have appeared on the Psychology Today website, and I'm not going to have time mm-hmm. to talk about both of them, but they're both okay. around this single versus married mm-hmm. Dichotomy.
Yeah.
But the one
right.
that really prompted me to want you to be on the show was the article, Is It True That Single Women and Married Men Do Best?
Right.
And in this claim, you know, you take on that claim that getting married is better for mm-hmm. everyone, and so you mm-hmm. you were mm-hmm. talking about the right. evidence for this, and so, but I'm actually more interested in just that breakdown, because obviously married men are married to somebody.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
but,
is
you know,
so first off, is that statement true, that single women and married men are happier?
Well, one of the main things is that overall, people don't get happier when they get mm-hmm. married. And so if you look more broadly at other ways in which single life or married life might be good or bad for men or women, if there's a difference, and often there isn't, but if mm-hmm. there's a difference, usually it's the women who do better at single life. And if somebody gets something out of marriage, it's more likely to be the men. And all these are on the average. You know, like you said at the very beginning of the show, we're all individuals. And no matter what social science research study you read, it's always averages, and there's always exceptions to the
right,
averages.
which somehow seems to get missed when the headlines get blared
right.
across the, you know,
exactly.
across the newspaper or the magazines.
Right.
And but you know, there is, you know, and I hear this all the time, and you actually pointed out in the article that a lot of it is about who files for divorce. And the statistics have shown that women are the ones by, I think it's, I want to, gosh, is it up as high as 80%?
I mean, it's close to 70% of 70%. All divorces are initiated by women. And you know, it's really amazing. Women have been initiating more divorces than men, at least as far back as 1867.
Oh my God. So this is not a new phenomenon once we got rid of,
Yeah,
when we came into no-fault divorce.
Yeah, and also once they get divorced, they are much less likely than men to want to get married again.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, I've been there, done that. Go ahead.
Well, and I would argue, based on what I do, is that my challenge is with how a lot of marriages are set up. And that kind of brings the question about, because we're talking about, or I have heard, the concept of his marriage versus her marriage, and the idea that women are so unhappy that, I mean, and anybody who's been through a divorce, for the most part, that is not a walk in the park. That is not a fun thing. Even the aftermath isn't necessarily all, hearts and flowers.
Right.
And so to take that step, and for me especially, if there are children involved, to take the step where you know you're not going to see your children maybe half the time. To me, that's a huge step to take. So what is this with the his and her marriages?
Well, women, even though marriages are becoming more equal between men and women, women still do more of the work, the housework and the emotional work of shoring up egos and soothing bruised feelings. And they're still the ones that are more likely to be what social scientists call kin keepers, meaning, they're arranging the social schedules and remembering everybody's birthdays. And so they're just doing a lot of the work of the marriage. And that might not always be such a wonderful thing for them.
And I guess my question about that is, and this is where my viewpoint comes in, and if anybody's interested in the story of how I got here, I'd be happy to share it. But this idea that I think some of that is self-inflicted.
Yeah. It is norms. It's just so, it has been like that for so long that it's hard to break out of it.
But it's part of that going back. And I do think that's what this pull is for a lot of people about, and especially with young people. And I don't know if you've done anything with the millennials about, they're, many of them are absolutely, even though they say, I think the statistic is something like 90% of people say they want to be married, but when you actually talk to people, they're actually terrified of it. I think because of these common statistics.
I don't know about so much about terrified, but I like to look at it in a much more positive way about single life, that there's so much that is really appealing about living single, and that we don't need to be married in the same to fulfill the same fundamental needs that we once did. So there was a time when women could hardly support themselves economically if they weren't married. So they were tethered to a husband for economic life support. And now that's not as true anymore.
Thank goodness. That definitely is something, a step in the right direction.
Yeah. It used to be more shameful to have sex outside of marriage. Now it's almost more shameful not to if you're not married. It used to be more shameful to have a child as a single mother, and there's still a stigma around that, but not nearly as much as there used to be. So in so many big, important ways, you can have a full, complete, meaningful life as a single person. You don't need to be married in the same way you need to. And then there are also real fulfilling and meaningful aspects about being single. There's research showing that single people are much more likely to maintain ties in their life, their ties with their siblings, their parents, their friends, their neighbors. And in fact, when you do those kinds of studies I described, where you follow people over time and see how they change when they go from being single to being married, one of the things they do on the average is married people become more insular. They don't pay so much attention to their friends or their siblings or their parents or their neighbors. It becomes, you know, just two of us. You are my everything. I just want to be your everything.
Yeah, well,
you know, there's some risk to that.
Well, right. I mean, and that's kind of the true statement. And I think it's even more true once a couple has children, that they even become more insular. They might spend a little bit more time with grandparents, only because I think grandparents are fighting to get in there.
Even couples without kids become more insular. Mm-hmm. It's not just about the kids.
Yeah, and sometimes I wonder if that's, you know, just falling into the habits without necessarily thinking about it. Although there does become a time issue and there does become a priority issue, and, you know, I think that's one of, or a balancing issue, maybe priority is not the right word, but a balancing issue of we only have so much time, how and where are we going to spend it? And, you know, figuring out, negotiating, you know, what activities do I hold on to? Do I continue to participate in? How much time, you know, do we spend with family? You know, all these kinds of things that I think couples need to negotiate, but it's a challenge, you know, and that's so
and the way they think about it now is very different from before. So my parents, for example, my mother was very close to her siblings. She spent a lot of time with them on her own. My dad had spent time with his work buddies, and neither of them ever thought of that as a threat to their marriage, or meaning that they didn't care about each other because they also had other people in their lives that they care about. And I think that the way that contemporary couples think about each other and their relationship can be a bit stifling.
Well, yeah, because it's, you're my soulmate, you're my best friend, you're supposed to fulfill all of my needs, which, by the way, there's not a single human on the planet that can fulfill all the needs of another human being. I do think, you know, I do think that the culture sometimes creates problems, maybe?
Absolutely. Yes, it tells certain stories about, you know, marriage and love that sound romantic but can be really risky.
Well, and as you've pointed out, they can be stifling, and I know that that's one of the things that people face is you know, it's this whole idea of, well, I will either have to maintain my complete independence or I will be subsumed by what I call the marriage blob. kind of absorbs everything in its pathway. And again, that's that 0-1 black white thinking, as opposed to you actually can create a lifestyle.
When I was researching my other book, How We Live Now, Redefining Home and Family in the 21st Century, I interviewed a lot of people who are trying out something else, which is called living apart together.
I've heard about that.
Mm-hmm. They're a committed couple. They really care about each other. They're not trying to break up. Some of them are even married. Some of them are even married with kids. But they want their own place. They want to live in places of their own. And they're not trying to have their own place so they can cheat and not get caught.
Right.
They just want to have that space, that time, that, you know, that both sides of the equation, having the togetherness of being part of a couple, but having the autonomy and the freedom and the time and space of having a place of your own.
Which, believe me, as having... My children are now grown, but I remember when they were younger, and it was like, okay, can I please just go to the bathroom by myself?
Really?
I mean, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I heard a comedian one day, and I was driving, which was rather dangerous because she had me in absolute hysterics about, you know, the way she would, you know, if she ever needed her family all together in one place, all she would do is go into the bathroom and close the door. And then within 5 yeah. seconds, they'd all be right outside the door. I just went, okay, don't drive off the road.
Right.
So this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm having a fascinating discussion of the pros and cons of being married with my guest, author and professor, Dr. Bella DiPaolo. And if you're married and not feeling the benefits of greater health and happiness, then I invite you to have a conversation with me about your options. I encourage you to take advantage of my free, no-obligation marriage strategy session. You can send me an email at leslie@foundationscoachingnc.com. That's FOUNDATIONS, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. Or you can give me a call at area code 919-924-0463. Again, that's 919-924-0463. And Bella, one of the findings you talk about is that people who lived the longest are the ones who either remained married or they remained single. That the people who got divorced, even if they remarried, they had shorter mm-hmm. lives. What's that all about?
Again, we don't know for sure, but my guess is that, you know, divorce can be very disruptive. It can be financially disruptive, even financially devastating. It can mm-hmm. be stressful, and it can be stigmatizing. Mm-hmm. But I mentioned that study because it's the longest running study on the records. I think it started in 1912, and the researchers are still following the people who are still alive. So it's an amazing study in that way. But there are more recent studies that look at people who got divorced more recently, and mm-hmm. those seem to suggest, it's not really definitive, but they seem to suggest that divorce is becoming less hazardous to your longevity. And I think that, again, it might be that we're becoming a society that's more used to divorce. It's not such a big stigma anymore. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when people used to talk about divorcees as if that was like the most awful thing in the world. And now,
right.
you know,
and it was always again slam on the women who were divorced,
yes.
not because
yes.
obviously they were divorced from somebody, but
right. yes. Yes.
So, I mean, you know, and I do not look at marriage as a panacea for everything. You know, it's a life choice, and that may be part of the problem, is that maybe people don't think about it as a life choice.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that that's one of the positions that you take, and you know, I always tell people, you know, if you're thinking about getting married or you're involved with somebody and, you know, marriage comes up, if the answer is not a definite yes, then it's a no, at least for now. I don't think people should talk themselves into being married. I don't think that's a really very good idea.
I think that's very wise.
And
I think that, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
For me, my focus is on people who are single, and I've been single my whole life, and I absolutely love it. So that's where I'm coming from. But I like to think about the question of how do you know if you should stay single? And I think what you're saying about having those misgivings—that's a big part of it. But think about how you go about your life. So if you have this feeling that you should be looking for someone, maybe you even tell yourself that that's what you want to do, but you never quite get to it. You know, you get to your inbox before that. You get to your cleaning out your sock drawer before you get to actually doing what it takes to find someone. Maybe that's a sign. You know, maybe that is you telling yourself, this isn't really what I want to do. Or maybe when you look for some, when you think about who you want, it turns out to be not what you hear that you should be looking for traditionally. Here's a great example. Somebody A woman named Joan Delfatore wrote a guest post for me for my Living Single blog at Psychology Today. And she talked about going to a therapist, and her therapist said to her, if you decide to get married, what kind of man would you look for? And Joan said, one with a challenging job and lots of outside interests, does volunteer work, plays sports, like that. And her therapist said, so you'd want someone who's well-rounded and intellectually stimulating. And Joan said, no, I want someone who's never home.
Right, which then begs the question, why be married?
Right, yeah. And I think people who are really do well single, they're not afraid of time alone. In fact, they mm-hmm. embrace it for their creativity and spirituality and rejuvenation and so many of the other benefits of solitude that psychologists are now learning about. People who are good at being single like making decisions for themselves. When they go to social events, they don't want to feel obligated to always be with the same person, you know, that partner, that spouse, that plus one. They'd rather go with different people or maybe not go at all. They're people who, single people are people who often really care about meaningful work mm-hmm. More than how much they're paid, although they might like both,
right.
Anyone would. And single people actually experience more personal growth than married people do. So
well,
there are
yeah.
a lot of real attractions to single
life. And I agree with that because, you know, mostly I agree with that because of the way marriage is looked at. Because I would argue mm-hmm. if you set it up right, you can do personal growth and still be in a relationship. It is a little challenging, though, because, you know, there's the mm-hmm. what's the old adage of that men marry thinking that their wives will never change and women marry thinking that their husbands will.
Right, which is a risk for both of them.
Well, yes, most definitely. But the idea that, you know, that we stay the same, mm-hmm. whether we're married or single, is crazy. I mean, hopefully we don't stay the same. All I can say is, having known myself as a 19-year-old girl, I'm going, oh, please don't let me be that poor person.
Right.
You know,
right.
Please let me have learned something.
Right.
And, you know, so I think it's more about getting clear about who you are and what's authentic to you. And so, you know,
right.
it's like another one of my isms is, you know, I would abolish the word should if
uh-huh.
I could. I hate that
uh-huh.
word. I don't know who
uh-huh.
the great they are who set themselves up as the experts on
uh-huh.
everything. And,
uh-huh.
you know, pretty much stand in judgment because, you
uh-huh.
know, it's the question of, you know, when are you going to get married, or when are you going to have a child,
uh-huh.
or when are you going to, it's like, well, what happens if I don't want to? And then it's, well, what's
right.
the matter with you?
That
like,
is
nothing.
So important. And I think that is one of the biggest points I've been trying to make in my almost 2 decades of doing research and writing and talking about single life, is that there are people who live their best, most authentic, most meaningful and fulfilling lives by living single. And it's not a matter of, oh, I could get into a marriage and make it work by doing this and that and the other thing. They just live their best lives as single people.
Mm-hmm. And I would do the counter that some people live their best lives as married people. But again, it's the individual thing.
But it's again, how does
anybody, and this is what I spend my days doing, is deciding what you're doing and why.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this idea that, well, if I just find my soulmate, then every single problem and challenge
right.
and whatever
yeah.
will all just
yeah.
go away. And, you know, one of my biggest pet peeves, and strangely enough, it also is why my show is titled what it is. It's like, you know, with all the mm-hmm. fairy tales, and they lived happily ever after, but nobody bothers to find out how they did it.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, 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 the story ends with them riding off into the sunset. Well,
yes.
But real life isn't like that, and then
mm-hmm.
people are completely unprepared. And so,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's the idea of how do we help people figure it out versus
mm-hmm.
feeling
mm-hmm.
like there's, I mean, and mm-hmm. this was really what happened to me. I mean, I had a, the man that I was madly and passionately in love with when I was 20 years old broke up with me. And then it was like, okay, now what? And I look at that as a great opportunity to, it's like, okay, then I had to stop and think about what did I really want my life to look like, and I decided that if the worst thing that ever happened to me was that I didn't get married, I'd be okay.
That was
very freeing to me.
And it was noble that you could get to that point, because so much of popular culture is about you have to be married to be happy, to be fulfilled. And so there's so few stories out there about the complete, fulfilling, meaningful single life that it's hard for people who really would do better single to recognize that. It's like, you know, the story I told you about Joan. She's saying, well, you know, I want someone who has hobbies and outside interests and volunteer work and sports. And it turns out she just wants somebody who's never there. She doesn't want to be married.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with that. And it's, you know, and so part of it is how do we get off of other people's backs? It's like, okay, the way I look at it is I have enough trouble keeping my own life going and going straight. I don't have time to worry about, well, what are you doing? But I think that that's also a discomfort when, you know, well, you're not following the rules. And it's like,
It is.
But who wrote the rules?
Exactly. Right. And, and sometimes our own rules are much better.
And I think it's giving people, you know, one of the things that I want to do, and I know that with your column and your books, you're doing the same thing, is giving people permission. Well, that is not the correct word. We are not giving anybody permission. We are giving people encouragement. There we go.
Yes.
To recognize who they are and then live into that, because, you know, that's the source of happiness.
Yes, we have so many opportunities to create our own life paths. And we have opportunities that people in generations before us didn't have. Mm-hmm. So it would be a shame if we all just shoehorned ourselves into the same into the same box that we don't have to be in anymore. But if that old box is great for you, you know, go for it.
Right. And it's really about finding what fits, because like I said, that to me, you know, is the underlying happiness. And this is my argument for, you know, people who are not thrilled with their marriages. Figure it out. What have you agreed to do that you don't want to do? And why did you agree to it? And can you not agree to it? Can you change? Can you have a conversation and change the rules? You know, I go back to, I don't know if you're familiar with Gail Sheehy's book, Sex and the Seasoned Woman.
No, I don't know
that one. Well, it's like 15 years ago that she wrote this book. And she was talking about, you know, women in their, you know, late 40s, early 50s, you know, mid 50s, about midlife, who have decided, you know, enough of all this stuff, it's now my turn. I remember reading that, and I'm going, you always should have been included. It never should have been that you had to give yourself up to be a wife or a mother or whatever. And, you know, and it's like...
But those are the norms.
Well, exactly. And I think that the women she was writing about, you know, were kind of the first generation when divorce was really you know, available to most people, that they, you know, that they had been boxed and shoehorned in. And, you know, I look at the very first episode of Mad Men, and I just went, it just made me break out in a cold sweat where women were put, and it's like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that we don't have to follow that anymore.
Yeah.
Well,
me too.
a really interesting conversation, and I want you to make sure that, you know, and again, I'm not saying that anybody should call divorce attorneys, but but I do think that, you know, that a lot of people could get a lot from reading your book. And can you tell people more about your column and your book and they can find out more information about this?
Okay. So my book is called Singled Out, How Singles Are Stereotyped, Stigmatized, and Ignored, and Still Live Happily Ever After. And you can get it online at Amazon, at bookstores. If they don't have it, ask them to order it for you. I also write the Living Single column for Psychology Today. I've been writing that blog since 2008. I write the Single at Heart column for Psych Central. And you can find more about me at my website, which is BellaDiPaolo.com. BellaDiPaolo, BellaDiPaolo.com, no dots or spaces or anything. And you'll find sections about my books, about my columns, about my research interests. So I think you can find lots of possibilities there.
Well, terrific. And, you know, this show truly is about how to have a great marriage, but I fully recognize that there are lots of reasons why this may not be possible, even if you really want it to work. And so my goal is to help you start thinking intentionally about your relationship in your life and what you want. And I will tell you that I don't think miserable and marriage should ever be used in the same sentence. And if that describes your relationship, my deepest wish for you is to take informed action sooner rather than later. And again, the choice isn't simply to stay or go. There's also the possibility of making it better, and that's what this show is about. And I encourage you to keep listening. And until next week, stay loving.